Off the ball. Rugby.
Really concerned about where the shape was going and where the club was going. I think you'll always have concerns. This player's not going to come out of Leinster in the next few years and say it was all amazing.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street. I'm Susanna Mullen. Oh, that's not my name. Susanna Mullen. Great start. And this is the podcast where every week we take a sporting topic or something that's dominating... Oh, I can't speak today, lads. Something that's dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public. Eve, Rachel, you're here as always. How are we?
I'm good now.
I'm good, thanks. I'm Rachel Sheehan. How are you, Susanna Mullen?
I hope you can speak better than me this podcast. I'm struggling already.
We've been very busy speaking today. We've been doing a lot of, you know, pre-interviews and everything like that. It's been a lot of talking so far.
Yes. If you're a usual What's listener, this is going to be a little bit of a different episode. We've still got lots of kind of opinions from the public, from our Instagram and social media, but we haven't been out in the street as we usually are, waving our microphone in people's faces. But we have had some very special guests on, so you're going to hear from some of them in some slightly longer audio segments than normal. But this is episode 21, and we're calling it A League of Their Own. And it's all about, yeah, very clever, isn't it? It's all about rugby league. Now, had either of you heard of rugby league before this week?
I'd heard of it, but I would have never watched it, which I think is probably the predominant opinion for most people who aren't avid rugby fans.
Well, unless you're an avid rugby league fan, yeah. As we found out this week, they are a small but passionate group of people in Ireland.
Yeah, I've kind of fallen in love with the rugby league community in Ireland.
This happens to us every week.
Yes. Yes.
Every topic, we're like falling in love with the sport, especially like the ones that are a bit underrepresented.
Oh, we were saying that earlier. Yeah. That's basically what we do. It's basically our career. Yeah. Find the most underrepresented sports and bring them out to the public. But if you haven't heard of rugby league or you don't know how it started, which actually I've heard of it and I've watched a couple of games, but I had no idea about the kind of origins of it. So we'll take you through it really briefly. But basically, to go way back, if you haven't heard the whole soccer kid who picked up a rugby ball story. In 1871, the English Rugby Football Union was created, and they had two types of players. They had the amateurs, who were public schoolboys or people rich enough to play the game for free, which is very nice, mainly from the south of England. And then we had professionals, which is not the kind of professional we know today, but they were actually poor workers and they needed to be paid to play because they couldn't afford time off work. And they were mainly from the north, so Lancashire and Yorkshire. And basically, the clubs in the north, they wanted to compensate those professionals who needed money to play because they couldn't afford the time off work. But the RFU, which is the Rugby Football Union, as I said, they refused, saying, and this is a quote that I found, "If men couldn't afford to play, then they shouldn't play at all," which is
brutal.
Very brutal. It kind of sums up, I feel, the attitude around amateur rugby at the time. But basically, they banned professionals and professional sports teams. So what did the professionals do? In 1895, they set up their own league and created the Northern Union. And basically, in the decade that followed, this is really interesting because it kind of reminds me of current times and how sports are trying to make themselves more exciting.
Totally.
Yeah, which is weird because this is
the FRC of the 1800s.
Yeah, the 1800s, which is mad. But basically, they needed to make it more exciting because they needed to attract more crowds and spectators in order to charge people money to come watch the game so that they could then pay their players. So basically, what they did was they changed some of the rules in rugby. They reduced the players from 15 to 13, so you had more room to like run and score and all that crack. They reduced the scoring, so a try in rugby league is 4 points, whereas in union it's 5. A penalty kick is 2, whereas in union it's 3. And this was to try and create closer games to make it more exciting. They also limited the tackles per team. So one of the key differences in rugby league is that you only have 6 tackles. And after that, if you haven't managed to score or kicked the ball away, it's a turnover. So the other team get the ball and they now get 6 tackles to try and score.
It's really like tag rugby for anyone who's played. Or American football. It's like you get a certain number of shots at scoring, and then if you don't do it within that time, ball goes back to the opposition.
100%. It's actually really like tag rugby. Tag rugby is built off league.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny because it's obviously called tag rugby, but it's really more tag rugby league. It's very similar, just played on a smaller pitch and then obviously with tags instead of tackles. But yes, there was also no lineouts, rucks or scrums because they wanted to speed the game up. So basically they had all these rules to make it more exciting, and shocker, it made league far more popular than rugby union in the UK at that time, and they got a lot more spectators and players. So that is how rugby league was born in the UK. And then we obviously know it went over to Australia, where again, with the whole thing of colonization, the RFU were trying to enforce amateur rugby in Australia. You had a bunch of working class people who were hearing about this league where people were being paid, and they went, nah, I want to do that. And thus, league was born in Australia, where it's now known as, I think, the biggest sport in the whole country.
I mean, did you get a sense of that when you lived in Australia, Rachel?
Oh, yeah. Like, I hadn't heard of it. I'd heard of it before. Like, I'd heard of the competitions in England, but it wasn't until I moved that it was like, okay, this is a really big deal. It's probably depending on what city you're in as well. Obviously, yes. In Melbourne, AFL is king, like, but especially in Sydney. I actually worked in the cafe of the South Sydney Rabbitohs for a couple of weeks.
There you go. You're closer than any of us.
That's the one Russell Crowe owns.
Ah.
Yeah, they were struggling and he bought about 25% share of it, so he's always knocking around those games.
I thought you were about to say he bought a coffee off of me and I met Russell Crowe.
This reminds me of that clip where somebody goes, well, sure, we learn something new about each other every day. This is how I feel about you right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very interesting that the pockets where league is big in the UK and Australia is where you had those poorer working class populations that needed to be paid. It's so funny how it stuck around, and you see it now. You've got the team that Andy Farrell famously played for like 13 years. Wigan is in Wigan in the north. We'll be chatting to Storm later, who's the captain of the Irish women's team, and she plays for Lee Leopards, I think,
yep.
Which is in Lee, which is in Greater Manchester, also in the north. So they're still very kind of concentrated in that area.
All around like old mining towns as well,
yeah.
Which is fascinating. Yeah, like that's where a lot of those workers would have come from, and they couldn't afford to take time off the mines. And you can see a lot of people are like, oh, does that class divide still exist? And like, there's strong arguments to say that it does, because in the years that rugby union's been around, they've had, I think, over 20 of those players have been knighted. And this year was the first year that a rugby league player had been knighted.
Wow.
And the game is, what, like 130 years old?
Has Andy Farrell never been knighted?
I don't think so.
I'm literally asking that question.
No, he's not, sir.
We'd know that, wouldn't we?
Also,
he should
would,
be.
Would he take it? He's the manager of the Ireland national.
I was about to say, maybe his service has been more. Although he captained England Union and League.
Yeah, as you know, it's a weird. When you're so ingrained in Irish culture as an Englishman, you're treading a very fine line, I'd say.
Are you speaking from experience?
A little bit there.
Anyway, we should get on. The reason we're talking about league, as I said at the very beginning, is that the Irish national teams were in action over the weekend in the Netherlands. We saw the women beat the Netherlands and also the Ireland men's A team. So this kind of spurred our interest in the whole thing. And today we had a long chat, a really informative chat with the head coach of the Ireland women's team, Matt Kennison. And we're going to play you a little bit about that chat, about what those games meant for the team and where they go from here. Ireland Women's League, obviously they were playing at the weekend against the Netherlands. They beat them 42-6 alongside, it was a doubleheader with the Ireland Men's A, who beat the Netherlands 30-0. Maddie, tell us, what was the significance of those games? Was it a bit of a friendly, or was it worth a lot more than that?
No, worth a lot more than that. excuse me, I mean, it's our last game before we go to the World Series in Toronto, so having that game time was super important for the girls. It was the second time we've played the Netherlands, so they were after blood because it was a close game in the first one in Dublin in 24. I think we won 16-12, and that was actually to get through the next stage of qualifying. So they were super keen to host us and try and get one back, but it was a great performance from the girls, probably the best we've ever put up, and it's a really good stepping stone in a lead-up to a tough World Series in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, talk to us about that World Series. So you've got Nigeria on October 21st, and then either Canada or Fiji in the final decider, which will be a week later on the 26th. And the winner of that will gain the final berth in the World Cup next year. So how important is this World Series? I mean, Ireland have never been to a World Cup before in the women's game, so you're really standing on the cusp of something here.
Yeah, we are. And look, it's been a really exciting journey. we went into qualifying early last year against Wales, and unfortunately we were unsuccessful in winning that game. So it meant we had to win our next two, and that was not the Netherlands and Greece, the Netherlands at home, Greece away, which we did. And then this summer we had a friendly against France, who were already in the World Cup, and they really showed us the level we needed to get to. So we went back to the drawing board, and we trained really, really hard for this game against the Netherlands. And so rolling in, we've got a really good prep, I think, with a couple of games under our belt and a lot of training. Nigeria, we've watched a little bit of film, kind of unknown a little bit, really unorthodox style of play, but very powerful and strong team. So that'll be a tough ask for the girls on the Tuesday. And then if we are successful, yeah, we play the winner of Canada and France, which either, you know, Canada's a home nation, been going very well in sevens and 15s. And a lot of those girls cross over. And then Fiji, we're pretty unlucky. I think they played Samoa or Tonga in their Pacific playoff, and they're unlucky to lose that. So this is their last bite of the cherry as well, and they're stacked. I think they've got 11 or 12 NRLW players, great coaching staff, you know, a really good lineage of rugby league heritage in Fiji. So, you know, if we can get through that first one, Nigeria, it doesn't matter who we pull, Canada or Fiji, it'll be a really, really tough game.
It's mental that Canada, a couple of players from a team that just were runners up in a World Cup final that saw the most spectators ever for a women's game, could now be playing in this competition that I feel like nobody knows anything about.
Yeah, like, have some of them played sevens as well?
Yes.
It's the trifecta of rugby.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you're a women's rugby player, I feel like there's not enough of you at that high level that you are just drafted to play everything to try and be as successful as possible, which I suppose is what Ireland are kind of trying to move away from. They're trying to focus on one core group of 15s players, build that game, and maybe just use sevens as more of a development pathway. So I think it's very unlikely that we'll see any of those Irish players crossing over into league. I'm not sure they would have even known it exists.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well when I heard about Canada. It's like, are we bringing our best 15, yeah, whatever, over? But when we spoke to Matt again, he did say that they're looking at a lot of avenues for the development of the game in Ireland.
Yeah, that was actually very interesting. We'll play you another clip from Matty now. It's a little bit longer, so buckle in, get comfortable. But he is really interesting on where he's trying to kind of poach players from, all the different sporting venues he goes to, and what he's doing to try and grow the women's game in Ireland. How much growth have you seen then, even in the past 4 years? Has there been obviously you're doing a lot of work in the background to try and grow the game, but have you seen that kind of pay off as well?
Yeah, I've definitely seen a payoff in the sense that the Irish team before I took over was very heavily influenced by the UK-based heritage players, and purely because they play more rugby league and a higher standard. But over the years of coaching in the Exiles and being involved in rugby league, the competition hasn't expanded. I mean, we were at three teams at the start. We went down to two, came back to three, had a potential for four. We had three this year and some quite competitive games. But we are getting more players into those current teams that we have that are being influenced by friends or seeing the opportunities to play for Ireland. So the calibre of the games and the quality of players has definitely increased that I've seen over the last couple of years, which is really positive. And I think for the girls that are in the squad now and the opportunity that we have, if we are successful in Toronto and we get that maiden berth in the World Cup, I think, you know, that will just blow the sport wide open. You know, it'll give us a footprint, you know, on the world stage in rugby league. I think it'll give us a bit of weight to carry at home and maybe bring new people to the sport and hopefully get a bit more exposure like, you know, we're getting here, which is great. And thank you very much for it. So I think that's the next step, is really being recognised as being a team that can compete. And then I think players that see that within Australia, within Ireland, in other sports, might venture over and join the rugby league movement.
Yeah, before we ask you more about kind of the growth of the game, I do want to pick up, you said that in Canada there's a bit of a overlap between union and league. Will we see some of the girls who participated in this World Cup final maybe playing in the league team, or do you think they come from kind of lower levels of the union game over there?
Yeah, I think we could see a couple of players that played in the Rugby World Cup.
Wow.
At the moment, the 35-player squad for each nation has been named. So you're allowed to pick 20 to play in the tournament from that 35. And I believe there are some of those players that might have been selected in that 35. Whether they're released from their rugby contracts or not, it's tomorrow that the 20 from each nation will be released. So very interested to see what Canada do with that. I mean, there's a couple of players that played for Dublin City Exiles who have returned home to Canada. Two girls who played at Railway Union within the rugby, Maddie and Danny. So I see their names are in the squad. So they're rugby converts. There's a few from the Canada Sevens that have been involved that might not have been involved in the last setup but have been in the past. So they have a very, very strong squad of athletes from all codes over there. So tomorrow we'll tell to see what kind of team they'll put out for the Toronto tour.
Okay, interesting.
It seems to me a very kind of international and diverse discipline in terms of you have lots of people who maybe would play, as you were saying, hockey or GAA or soccer coming to play rugby league. But then you also have kind of people whose grandparents are Irish or are now representing Ireland in rugby league. Do you think now with the waves of Irish emigration to Australia, where it's so big, that maybe, you know, people will always, a lot of Irish people tend to go over and then come home. Do you think people will be bringing rugby league back to Ireland, kind of in a way that you've brought a lot of different disciplines here?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, if you're a female athlete and you're going to Australia, there's so many opportunities for you. I mean, we've seen the success of Sarah Rowe, who left from Mayo football and went down as playing for Collingwood in the professional women's AFL. We've got, you know, some of our girls have gone down and are involved in the rugby league system down there. Trisha Doyle, Erin Cole, Stephanie Carroll have all immigrated from Ireland down and playing in quite high-level rugby league. And the women's rugby league, the women's AFL, the women's rugby in Australia it's really well respected. They're really well paid. They're really well looked after. And it is a professional setup for those girls. So it's a great pathway for those that might have been, you know, athletes here and want to go down and experiment. And I think if their time is up, you know, that their visa expires or they've spent their time and they're due to come home and hopefully they've seen the impact that rugby league can have on young women and athletes, I hope they will. And I hope they bring that experience back because I've seen it firsthand. You ask anyone of your Irish friends who've been down there how big the women's rugby league game is and women's sport in general. Yeah, hopefully they have the passion when they return and they can help build the sport here at home.
Talk to me, you talked about AFL there. Talk to me about the crossover with rugby league and other sports. Because as you said, you're going to GAA games, you're going to rugby union.
Yeah,
but how does that, is that crossover difficult? Have you found that they're kind of adjusting well to league? Because when I've been reading about it, it seems to be that they're like two completely different games.
In the conversion of sport, honestly, in the last year, I've found the GAA girls so much easier to coach into rugby league than the rugby girls, purely because they don't have any rugby bad habits. They don't have any bad posture or positioning before they make tackles. They don't have their defined lines on how they should run plays. They're just athletes. They're tough athletes that can catch a ball anywhere within their 1-2 meter space. They've got great feet. They've got great hand-eye coordination. For instance, Alice Fitzgerald, a young girl who works for us in the business, she also plays GAA for Emmett's Brain, is quite a very good GAA player. She came over last year. She was nervous, knew nothing about rugby league, didn't know how to tackle. She played a little bit of tag, and within 3 or 4 months, she made her debut against the Netherlands, was almost player of the match, then played again in Greece. Again, very unlucky not to get player of the match with great post-contact meters and stuff, purely because she's just athletic and coming in as a blank canvas, with all the athletic attributes with none of the bad habits. Now, not to say that all rugby girls are like that. Molly Boyne's a great example. She doesn't have any bad habits. She came in very open-minded with a really, really good skill set and a great base to work from. She's a great defender, really positive, great ball skills, and just so open to learning. And you can see that in her development over the last 2 games she's played. I think the rugby girls are faster to advance to the rugby league kind of IQ, but the GAA girls don't take any bad habits with them and get to a more comfortable stage quicker just with their athleticism and their ability to adapt to ball sports, I think.
So obviously, I mean, the GAA having so many transferable skills. I mean, have you seen stuff like that, Rachel, where you've seen players in Camogie that also play soccer or rugby or a whole other host of games?
Ah, yeah, to be fair, I think it's something we see with women's sport across the board. Like when you see one successful sportswoman, you're all like, oh, she also, like Sam Monaghan, also won an All-Ireland medal with Meath playing
under
16.
Yeah, she was a goalie, wasn't she?
Yeah, and it's just, it's constantly happening. But GAA players, because we've got like the basics, you know, that athleticism, you've seen it with the AFLW. Like we've had that conversation in here before. Now the rugby league, it's just like the GAA are going to have to hold on to these players before they begin poaching them as well. But I think it's a good sign, you know. It just shows, like, I'd never heard of it before in Ireland. But when I see the game being played, it's like, oh yeah, like that's a GAA player, is like a footballer's bread and butter.
Mm. Yeah. I think it is interesting that maybe it's just a case of, like Maddie's doing, getting down to GAA clubs and being like, did you know this exists? Come along to a training, which is literally what he's doing every day, but come along to an open trial. We want you to give it a go. You never know. Because the link between the GAA and the AFL is massive. And yes, they're similar games, but I think it's also a case of it's a known pathway. And you kind of know if you play GAA in Ireland, there's an option for you to go over to Australia.
Yeah, and with the league, it's taking out all of the rules. Like, if you ask me, do you know the rules of rugby union? I'm like, roughly, like, obviously I can follow the match, but if you ask me to play a game, I wouldn't have a clue what to do. But
yeah,
rugby league is so much simpler from a rules point of view.
Yeah.
It's probably a really good selling point for him to say, oh, have you played tag rugby before? Yeah, which most GAA players, like most people do now, yeah, socially.
So big.
It's hard to avoid it.
Played it in school the whole time, like in primary school.
Yes. Now, I wonder, was that tag rugby rules or did they have like kind of rugby union rules just with the belts? I've always wondered that about tag in school level, because tag rugby is built off rugby league when you play it properly. and there's like a load of, they're not complicated rules, you're right, you can learn them very quickly.
Yeah.
And actually Maddie spoke about a GAA player who he's drafted in, who she played a bit of tag rugby first and then she made her debut in rugby league.
Yeah.
What I do think is mad is that a lot of these girls come in and their debut is for Ireland.
Yeah. Straight to the top.
Straight to the top. And obviously he has full confidence in them and he's teaching them, and I mean, it's such a, not a one-man job, there's a whole organisation, but he is doing so much to grow this game and coaching them all and getting them ready. But I still can't imagine putting on a green jersey in any sport and that being my first time.
Is this just you looking for a plug on the Irish tag team again?
Yes, as per usual. Did you not see I started the Maddie interview with my plug? But no, it's also, so he chats about kind of coming from GAA, coming from rugby union, but what spiked my interest in that, and we brought it up with him as well, is Molly Boyne, who, she was my first ever captain.
Aww.
In rugby, which is just mental. It was years ago when I started out in Trinity. She was captain that year and she was incredible. We always knew she was far better. It's like when I talk about Linda Dugang playing on my Trinity team. Yeah, and Fiona Tewett, who just represented Ireland at the World Cup, and I'm like, there wasn't even a comparison.
I don't think you've been giving Susanna enough respect.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, they were so much better than all of us. And we were all just kind of looking at them like, you're going to last 1 month here and then you're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And they tended to be. But Molly stuck around for like 2 or 3 years of my Trinity career, and then she graduated before me. She's a couple years older. But she, as she said when we chatted to her, she has given so much to the game of rugby union. She's been playing for 15 years. She was the captain of Leinster this year in the Interpros, which people would have seen across Leinster Rugby social media if you follow them. And now she has just made the jump. And we're going to play you kind of some of her now in a second, but I did think it was striking how I felt like she was a little bit conflicted in her heart being part of union, but really enjoying the game of league so far.
Yeah, it's almost like she didn't want to say how much fun she was having playing league. She's like, I'll be back to my club for the AIL, don't worry.
Yeah.
One of the things I've loved from hearing from people kind of online and from people involved in the game is how rugby union and rugby league can coexist. We had a comment from She Shoots Sports
on
Instagram.
I love her. We've referenced her before in our pod. She is fantastic. She does all the women's rugby stuff, so I've met her a couple of times. But sorry, I completely interrupted.
No, it's fine. She goes, I photographed the Irish Rugby League team and the local teams. It's a super game and the teams are skillful, talented. It's great fun. A lot of union players play league during the summer.
Yes.
And you really do get a sense of that from what who we've kind of spoken to, that like from people who want to grow the game by saying, like, lads, you don't have to play GAA during the summer. Sometimes you can play rugby league during the summer.
Yeah.
And someone,
I'm putting a stop to this pod right
sorry.
Now.
Sorry. Sorry, Rachel.
Well, that's the problem. That's also, I don't have the comment to hand, but somebody commented on Instagram saying there's already too many sports in Ireland.
No such thing.
Well, there is and there isn't. Like, yes, we want as many sports as we can find, but how can you grow one to a massively professional level when it's somebody's just for crack sport? It's a bit like cricket sometimes, I think, like, and somebody again said this in the comments, I wish I had them all to hand, I'm sorry, there was too many of them, but somebody referenced kind of cricket and league being similar. All the rugby union kind of lads from Rock and Gonzaga and Belvo and all those schools play cricket in the summer because why not? Mm-hmm. They just want to do something fun, but it's never something they take seriously.
So you'd hope by seeing the likes of Molly Boyne taking the step to league and seeing a World Cup qualifier happening in a couple weeks' time will not perhaps raise the profile of the game, is the wrong phrasing, but kind of bring more attention to the fact that this isn't just a summer sport. This is a very much something that can grow on this island.
Yeah, well, let's hear from them because they speak about how they got into the game, but also whether they think rugby union and rugby league can coexist. So it's Molly Boyne, Leinster captain and now Irish international in rugby league, and also Storm Cobain, who is, well, was the Ireland captain at the weekend against the Netherlands. She's waiting to see whether she will be the captain for the World Series and the World Cup should they make it that far. But she's been playing league since its inception in Ireland in 2021. So she was really interesting to hear on the topic. So yeah, buckle in again. You've got about 7 minutes of Molly and Storm bringing you all the interesting insights in how they got into the game of league. Molly told me, Storm, that you have played every game for Ireland since the women's team was set up, which, with a bit of Googling, told me was in October 2021. Now you guys are standing on the cusp of a World Cup qualification. How does that feel for you?
Yeah, obviously, whenever I first joined the team, it was sort of like an unknown entity. Like, we didn't really know how it was going to be, we didn't really know how far we were going to get, and the World Cup was actually supposed to be in France this year, and then France pulled out of it, so we'd actually qualified. And then because France pulled out of the World Cup, we've had to go through this whole other qualifications like process to get back into it, so I feel like we've gone around the world for a shortcut, really.
Yeah, mad. And how, I know you play over in the UK as well, but how long have you been playing league?
I've been playing rugby league since May 2021.
Okay.
But I've been playing rugby, I grew up playing rugby union, but obviously I'm from Northern Ireland, from the accent. So I've been playing rugby league since, rugby union since I was about 12, I think. So 15 years of rugby, but yeah, only four years of rugby league.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll come on to ask Molly the same question, but what encouraged you to make the switch then 4 years ago?
COVID, actually. Rugby league was the first rugby back after COVID. I was sick of just training and not playing matches and just getting a bit fed up of going through the motions and not having any competitive fixtures. So a few of the girls on my union team said, you know, we're going to these trials at Bedford Tigers, you know, you should think about going. I was like, oh no, I'll be terrible. I've never even watched rugby league. Like, I'd know nothing about the sport. Didn't even know that there was two codes until I came over to England for university 2017, and then people were talking about rugby league and I was like, what are you talking about? There's no such thing. So the switch was quite fast and quite dramatic, but I'm quite pleased that it's worked out for me in the long run.
And are you still playing both or just the league now?
Just the league now. I moved up. So I used to live in Luton. That's where I started teaching and lived there for 3 years. I played both whenever I was living there. And then with the Rugby World Cup coming up, I decided, look, I wanted to give myself the best chance to get into the Irish squad for that. So I moved up to Manchester to focus completely on rugby league, and I've been playing with Lee Leopard since then. So the league time, like season, I guess, is from
by April till October, and we get about 6 weeks off before we get into pre-season. So it's a full-time league.
Okay, we're going to come back to your kind of game over in the UK, but Molly, I have to ask you, obviously you've only very recently made the switch. Has it been a similar experience of just like a rapid kind of conversion?
Oh, yeah, God. I kind of started training for the first time in May, then played my first game in July, and then the game at the weekend. So I've had two rugby league games, and I've really enjoyed them so far. It was kind of a case of a couple of the girls who I play union with encouraged me to go down and give it a try for the open sessions for the Irish team, and really enjoyed it. Very physical and a good way to kind of apply your physicality in the same way as you do in union, and kind of the ball skills are all transferable. But as Storm said, it's a case of like, you know, learning the rules and figuring out what you can and can't do. And, you know, I love rucks in rugby union, and unfortunately there's none in league. So trying not to do anything stupid there, but really enjoying it so far. Really like getting on great with the girls, and it's great to just, you know, learn a new sport and kind of throw yourself in the deep end. So it's been great.
What do you think is the hardest skill to transfer over, or maybe to let go of?
I would say probably not running to support somebody in a carry and like kind of anticipating a ruck. And probably I'm a chop tackler, kind of grab for the ankles in union, and you kind of need to, you know, start higher and come down to kind of protect legs in league. So it's a bit more upright. So, you know, kind of adapting to tackle on the ball and then working to control the body as well is a change where I'd be really, you know, my first thought would be snatching it at ankles in union. So I think that just a change of the mindset really of how you're going to play the game and how you're going to approach contact is the biggest difference, I think.
I think the hardest thing as well is in league, obviously, you got to lie on top of them. In union, it's very much roll away as fast as you can. So that switch is quite difficult to get your head around.
Yeah, it's funny. I was watching a video kind of explaining the rules of league, and it was saying that you don't have a ruck. And this guy was explaining it as like a ruck just looks like a giant mess of bodies. And it pretty much is. But then in league, it's for someone coming from a rugby union background, it's actually quite difficult to understand why the hell these people are wrestling on the ground for 10 seconds before they all just get up and keep playing. So there's definitely a confusing element to trying to catch up on all the rules. But Molly, obviously you captained Leinster in this season's Interpros, and that's kind of finished up now. You've obviously gone back to club, I'm sure, and yeah, this has allowed you time, I'm sure, to kind of explore rugby league. But have you thought at all about how you're going to balance the two alongside each other?
I suppose that's kind of going on at the moment. When I first, you know, went down to join the league trainings, I wasn't really sure where I was going to end up. But with the World Series coming up and the opportunities that brings, after the Leinster campaign finished up, I just kind of had a long, hard look at myself to decide what my priorities were going to be for the next while. And, you know, with the World Series in Toronto in 2 weeks' time, I decided I want to put my best foot forward for that. So there have been some sacrifices in terms of not playing some of the union games that are going on at the moment. We've just started the AIL season. So when we're in the Netherlands at the weekend, my club team had a game as well. So it's just a case of, you know, I was trying to be as open and honest with the coaching staff in my union club and with Matty, with league as well. So there will be games when we're away as well. But I think the opportunity coming up is too incredible to pass by or to jeopardize in any way. So it's a juggling situation, and one that you know, took a bit of time and consideration, because, you know, I've been very committed to my rugby union team for a long time. So I think everybody has been very understanding about my commitments now. So it's great to have the opportunity to do both, and really for this month it's all rugby league.
So for the girls there, I guess this month is all about rugby league. And for the political nerds here, which is population...
Just not me.
Me.
Yes, correct. Well, actually, we don't know about Rachel's political interests.
Not as strong as Eve's.
Okay. So today, this month is obviously budget 2026 month, and everyone in the office has been very interested in where money is going through Sport Ireland, who's getting allocated what. And I asked Matt this briefly, and we have a full chat with him that's going to be, you know, uploaded later, asking about what sort of funding might Sport Ireland give Rugby League?
Mm.
And there's going to be conversations happening. It's all still very much in the beginnings of where that money is going to go and how much it is. But kind of speaking to the girls about kind of their own funding of this journey to Canada and hopefully to Australia for the World Cup, it's a similar story we see in a lot of women's sports, where a lot of it is self-funded. But even, you know, we had them talking about sort of their funding and their journey to this World Cup as a whole.
Yeah, not even just women's sports. I think any sport that isn't widely recognised, I don't even want to say by Sport Ireland, because I don't want to throw it on them. I think it's just, it doesn't have public attention, doesn't have support from media, from anybody. They find it hard to raise funds, to get to tournaments. And I suppose that's a barrier in every sport, you know, that they, how do you grow if you can't get to the international tournament? And how do you grow if you can't pay your players? I mean, it harks back to 18, whatever I was talking about at the beginning, that the people who were paid played better and it invited more crowds and more spectators to the game. So it is interesting. But I when you were talking about that with Maddie, I didn't come in, but it's funny that Sport Ireland apparently gave 35,000 extra euro to Rugby League of Ireland for COVID funding. So that was, a wider kind of funding for various sports to help bring them out of COVID. The women also saw, I don't have the figure, but they also saw a massive input of funding from Sport Ireland in 2021 in order to specifically grow the women's game. So it's interesting that they're receiving quite a lot of funding, but yet they don't seem to be seeing that in terms of their travel arrangements,
It's all
tournaments.
It's all comparative. Like, 35,000 euro is so much money to, like, me, for example, but to an entire sports organisation, it's probably... It's,
yeah, it could be we're seeing that now in that they're beating the Netherlands. Like, that could have been that 3 years ago, true. That investment. It's hard to tell.
And Maddie did talk about the fact that they used to have their training camps over in the UK, because that's where most of their players were based. Now they have them in Ireland, where, yes, it now means that UK players have to fly over, but the facilities are free. So they no longer have to pay to rent out pitches in the UK. So they're obviously seeing the benefit of this in some way or another, but you're right, how far does 35,000 euro really stretch? But let's hear from Molly and Storm talking about how they're funding, especially this World Cup qualifier journey, but then also how much it might mean to them should they make a World Cup.
In terms of, like, the upcoming games now in Canada, are you funding your own flights for that?
Yeah, we are, unfortunately. I'm quite fortunate that I've been captain for Lee this season, so I got invited to speak at a captain's run event that was happening at the stadium for Lee Leopards. And, you know, it was brought up that we were having to fund our own flights, and really, really grateful that a company here, Structura, have sponsored those flights for me. So they've covered those. So I'm not out of pocket, but I know a lot of the other girls are. And when your flights are over a grand and you're having to take time off work to go out there as well, you know, that's a big commitment and it's a big financial impact as well.
And all the kind of flights back and forth for training, I know Maddie was saying that a lot of the players are now based in Ireland, which is great for kind of growth of the game, but I presume there's still a lot of people coming from the UK. Are they paying for flights across for training and that kind of thing?
Yeah. And when we played France in July, I've had to fund those flights as well. So like I said, all of that's self-funded. Any flights for training, self-funded. Food while we're over, that's self-funded.
Do you think, if you qualify, if you manage to win this World Series now in October and make it to a World Cup, do you think that would have a big impact on not only media attention, but then potential funding from, I know you get some from Sport Ireland, but maybe sponsors as well?
I'm hopeful that it will. I'm hopeful that it'll bring attention to us and how successful we have actually been. You know, as a team that's only been set up for 4 years, to make it into a World Cup, like, that's phenomenal. I don't think there's a lot of countries in the world that could say that. So I'm really hopeful that, you know, if we do get into the World Cup, then we can get the backing of local and national companies.
I think it's all about kind of, you know, media presence as well. We've seen, like, with the Rugby World Cup for Union, like, the more that's out there, the more that people are aware. And I think even just the post that you guys made through Off the Ball to kind of ask people questions about rugby league got shared with everybody that I know who plays here. So it's just about kind of raising awareness, and the more people who know about the great things that are happening, the more they can support them, because if they don't know about them, they can't possibly engage with it. So you know, the performances then kind of give opportunities for that too.
Yeah, you need a few TikTok stars as well. You need Nana McGann and Eve Higgins on your team.
That's it. I think can think of a couple of people we'll nominate for that job, so we'll get back to you on that.
Perfect, I'll look out for it. Speaking of TikToks, I've actually been looking at the Rugby League Ireland Instagram. That's where I'm getting all my pictures from, because there's none on Sportsfile, classic.
Yeah.
But they're not bad, I have to say. They have like rapid updates of the scores after games. They have loads of photos of all the players. They had photos of both the men's, I think it was the men's A team that played in the Netherlands, who beat them 30-0 as well, so that shouldn't be discredited either, and then loads of the women's, so they're not doing too badly at the moment.
No, and it's interesting that you'd bring up the men's, because obviously we're focusing so much on the women right now because of their upcoming World Series, but the men's Rugby League Ireland team are in a very interesting and difficult position, in the fact that they actually are not allowed to compete in the next World Cup because they were reclassified as an affiliate member of International Rugby League, supposedly because they didn't meet all the criteria. Probably not enough clubs and teams and players in Ireland.
Which is weird, because I was reading an article that said the European kind of Rugby League, I don't know what it's called, not a society, but you know what I mean, committee basically published a report that said that there was growth in the Irish League numbers participating in the game. But then there was a former kind of head of rugby league saying that's absolute bull. We've seen like complete drop in numbers. A bunch of teams aren't participating this year. A bunch of the club teams. I don't know what else he spoke about how there's no junior teams and all these things that factored into the ultimate decision to basically decredit them, or what's the word,
to reclassify them for this World Cup cycle.
Them, yeah.
But we had a comment on Instagram from Dublin City Exile, so one of the rugby league clubs, and they said rugby league is a brilliant sport, and anyone who's played it would testify to that. Many union players said they'd choose league over union after playing it, but it needs more exposure here in Ireland. There are active clubs in Galway, Dublin, Armagh, and Cork, and definitely room to grow. Those players representing currently in international level with the Irish women's team competing in Canada this month. We're always recruiting too, if anyone fancies giving it a go.
They took their shot.
They did. Clever. Fair enough. Clever. I would do the same. But that's the thing. I don't know. Not that I don't know who to believe, but this article that I read, which was from a reputable source, I promise, said that the Bulls Cork team didn't field a full season of matches in 2024 and they needed players from other teams to field a side for every game. It also said Banbridge in Northern Ireland and Athboy didn't field teams at all. This is in the men specifically. So it's, I don't know, but it still seems to me to cut them out of a World Cup cycle only, in my eyes, would decrease the likelihood of people playing the game here, because there's nothing to aspire towards. So if they're punishing a country for not having enough participation in the game by then not allowing them to provide role models and something, like as Molly and Storm said in that clip, you know, they'll get eyeballs if they make it to a World Cup, and if you can't see it, you can't be it. People won't know that it's going on, they won't know what to aspire to. So it seems really ironic to me that the International Rugby League Committee would cut a country from a potential like growth.
I wonder, is it to stop the, like, a country just getting in a lot of superstars for the sake of one tournament winning, and then there being absolutely no grassroots level of development? Because they weren't the only team to be reclassified. Like, it's not just a, it's not an anti-Irish thing.
Yes.
So I wonder, is that like their long-term goal is the development of clubs, and that's why they didn't allow it?
So International Rugby League have said that they will assist Ireland, Italy, Lebanon and Scotland to grow the game domestically, since they were classified as affiliate members. So it's probably a longer process.
I get you, okay.
Of trying, and it's something that's so frustrating, I'm sure, for so many people within the rugby league community in Ireland, because they've made World Cups in the past. They've qualified the men's team.
They've been to five.
Yes.
Between 2000 and 2022, I think.
So to then kind of have to take a step back and think longer term, how do we grow this? Yeah, it's frustrating, I'd imagine, but at the same time, not all hope is lost.
I take your point. Now I get it. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, but it's a bit of a catch-22 in that...
Yeah, it is.
Yes, you don't want to load the team full of people who have been playing in the UK for the past 20 years and have found an Irish granny. Similar, this is what happens in the Tag Rugby World Cup. The likes of Lebanon, who we played against... Well, actually, the women didn't, but the men did in the World Cup a few years ago, is just Aussies who have a Lebanese heritage. Yeah. But none of them are actually playing tag in Lebanon. Similar for the Hong Kong team. So I understand it from that point of view, but I think it's very hard to grow a domestic league and grow domestic players if they don't have somebody to look up to.
I feel like if you could take the passion, all the passion that this small community in Ireland has, and multiply that and try and get the number of people that the passion deserves. Because there's, you know, this is probably one of the topics that we've got the most really engaged
feedback
on.
You say that every week.
I know, but I was actually getting quite emotional reading some of the comments under our Instagram post about it. And it was shared so much because it's not like we're talking about, you know, GAA or soccer that has such a foothold in so many communities in this country and you grow up playing it, or you at least know somebody who grew up playing it, and it's so much part of people's communities. Whereas this seems a lot more niche and yet has so much belief behind it. We had initially we had a comment, and then I asked for a voice note because the comment kind of impressed me so much from Ryan Hogg, who has represented Ireland internationally for rugby league, kind of about what this sport means for him.
And rugby league is just so special to me because of the memories and bonds I've formed with some really fantastic people. I've been lucky enough to represent my country and receive 3 full international caps, and looking to hopefully maybe add a few more in the next couple of weeks. I was also given the opportunity to play with a professional club in the UK, and through these opportunities I've met people from all walks of life, made friends for life while creating some of my best memories, and like I just instantly fell in love with the sport the minute I played it. Just the ball and play time, the speed, the physicality, all of this mixed in with the fact that it's played in summer compared to the winter where Union is, it just makes the whole experience so much more enjoyable. And for anyone who is interested in staying fit over the summer, I'd obviously highly suggest getting involved and try and give it a go, get in contact with someone, because rugby union players especially, playing league is just going to be so much more beneficial for you than doing nothing in the off season or playing GAA or anything else, athletics, whatever it is you're doing. Rugby league is going to far improve your game more so than anything else. Like, you'll 100% be returning back to pre-season a lot fitter. The speed and tempo of the game, you need to be moving, you can't be, there's not as much breaks, it's not as stop starty, so you'll be going back to pre-season but full aerobic endurance, and also the technical skills of like catch, pass, tackling, they're also still going to be developed throughout your summer. So it's definitely a good idea for anyone who's interested to try and reach out.
Again, how do you feel about that, Rachel, that rugby union players should turn away from GAA in the summer and instead pick up rugby league?
I disagree with that. I want rugby league to grow, but not to the disadvantage of the GAA.
That's fair enough. It's interesting the way he talks about kind of how much he loves it, but it is still very small here in Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to Australia, where you probably had firsthand experience of just how massive it is over there.
Yeah, but I think Australia paints a good picture for Ireland in that, like, there is hope to grow it. Like, clearly, as I said, we've got the passion. But there's, like, one stat which is insane, that participation in the NRL, which is the rugby league in Australia, was up 20% last year. So it's not just people watching it. And they've put so much work into this, you know, and it's heavily funded, but this isn't like a new sport that we're trying to see, oh, will this take off? Like, there's a blueprint there, there's evidence there, it works, and they do things a little differently, that helps it. Like, they have the State of Origin series, which is basically New South Wales plays against Queensland, but you play for the club that you first played rugby for. So a lot of the Queensland players, they would have like been born in Queensland maybe, but now they play for Sydney clubs, but they go back, so it's you know, it would be like the equivalent of, you know, someone that's playing for Leinster now, if they
went back,
were born
to their
in Connacht
club. Yeah,
and like then they'd play against each other, and it's the biggest sporting event, and all, like, they just create such a big deal out of it. So yeah, the sport is great, but they're also doing like lots of different things to...
Yeah.
They do that in the middle of the NRL season. It's basically like, oh, we don't want you to get bored of the club scene. Here's something new to spice your life up.
Yeah, my brothers tune into the State of Origin every year. They're obsessed with it. But speaking of doing new things, they've also moved their opener of the NRL over to Las Vegas every year, which has been huge. It's done massive numbers for them, not only in gaining an American audience, but also getting people in Australia back interested in the game. And then they've spoken about the success of it. They said that in 2024, rugby league was officially the biggest sport in Australia. And this past final, which was also on last weekend, actually, which I think was the Brisbane Broncos and... Oh, I don't want to get this wrong. But basically, it was the biggest...
They're playing a Melbourne team anyway. Melbourne Storm?
Yes, Melbourne Storm. Well done. It was the biggest grand final in Australians' history. So it's only getting bigger. And I read a lot of articles about how much they use social media and how they use it very differently. And they're really trying to grow it. And it's clearly working. So I think it'll be interesting to see as they expand globally. Obviously, we have pockets in Northern England. There's pockets in the south of France. There's a huge pocket in Australia, Papua New Guinea, all those kind of countries in the Pacific. But as they expand into places like America, will the likes of us, not the players, because we know the Irish players who play league are already a passionate bunch, but will people who don't know as much about the sport suddenly start to pay attention and through that pay attention to the Irish teams?
Well, I think if we're doing a little like word in the studio, my kind of conclusion to all of this is that I will actually be throwing an eye over the women playing in Canada for their qualifier against Nigeria.
Absolutely. I don't have a massive word in the studio. I think if it can coexist alongside rugby union, fantastic. I wouldn't want to see rugby union disappear either. I think it's a very different game, equally as good of a game. I'm not sure how that works is my final decision. I don't know if one player realistically can play both at a top level. But for the moment, as Molly said, that's the way it's going to be, and we'll see what happens as it grows down the line.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tuning in. I hope anyone that's listening will put it into Instagram, put it into TikTok. Maybe the FYP will have their way and you'll get some highlight clips, because there are some serious highlight clips, especially of tackles. Like, it's so physical and the ball is in play for so long. So big ups to Rugby League, and hopefully it'll just continue to increase.
Yeah, they're not wrong. It is an exciting sport to play and to watch. But we hope you enjoyed this slightly different version of Word on the Street. We might do it again. We'll see. But for now, we will be back next week.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah,
I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.